This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Thank you, you're too kind. If you're impressed with me, tonight's guest will blow you away. Bryson DeChambeau wears a hat straight out of Ben Hogan's closet, and when you talk to him, you quickly realize it's just the head cover on a noggin of knowledge. It won't be long before his followers will be wearing lab coats and using Bunsen burners on their balls. Considering I didn't finish high school, I find it slightly intimidating to be interviewing someone so off the charts smart. But this is not the first time I've looked like an imbecile, just for you. Luckily, I didn't have to go to great lengths to interview Bryson. It turns out Big B lives in Big D, just like little old me. My show normally takes me all over the world, but today all I had to do was increase my carbon footprint by jumping in the old truck and heading over to Dallas National Golf Club. All right, Bryson, give me your theory of the golf swing.
First off, golf is geometrically oriented linear force.
Right.
And then you got a bunch of angular momentum potentials that you can drive across the different angles of the grip.
We may live in the same city, but when it comes to talking about the golf swing, it's like we're from different planets. When did the golf world and the science world begin to collide for you?
My golf coach, Mike Shy, gave me this book called The Golf Machine. This book revolutionized my way of understanding not only just the world around me, but how I learned about things. You know, I was able to apply this book that was more of a little bit of biomechanics and some physics applied to the game of golf. I was able to apply reading to the game of golf, writing to the game of golf. So I started to compare all my subjects to the game of golf. You know, and that really helped me understand how to improve my ability to learn about the game and understand the game at hand.
Yeah, give me an example.
From a physics perspective, I started to understand from this book, Golf and Machine, how a ball flies through the air. And that was really intriguing to me. I was like, wow, you can actually explain a little bit of the game. And I wanted to go down that route and see how far it would take me.
Yeah.
I went to some crazy places, my goodness. I mean, my dad hated some of the stuff I did.
Yeah, what did your mom and dad think of this early exploration, if you like?
I thought I was nuts.
Yeah.
You got this kid that had a great golf swing, right on plane.
But the boy's not right.
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, I was hitting it great, and you know, my coach, Mike, let me go down different paths. I was trying to figure out how to become the best ball striker possible. And this love of wanting to be the best ball striker came about because of Ben Hogan.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big deal to me. I loved watching his golf swing, and there was an incredible fascination with his ability to repeat motion.
Yes.
And so about the age of 17, I started swinging on this zero-shifting plane, one-plane swing, in a sense. The club would literally go on one plane the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to do that. I want to swing it on one plane because there's no deviation, so the club pass should theoretically, relatively speaking, be very consistent if I can make that same motion every time.
Hogan called it the sheet of glass, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, you can absolutely call it that, yeah.
Yeah. When did you sense that it was the right thing to do? Because there must have been, you know, moments throughout your early career where you thought, I wonder, am I, you know, on the right path here?
I would say when we developed the one length set. Now, this came about from swinging on one plane. And I was thinking to myself, there's got to be an easier way to swing all these irons. Why are they all different lengths? You know, especially when I'm swinging on one plane, because that means I'm going to have to change my body posture every single time to account to swing on one plane.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, what if you can make all the lie angles the same so I could be in the same position? Well, then I'd be adjusting the hand positions for the lengths of clubs. And then I was like, well, why not just make them all the same length? And it hit me. Like water, like you spilling water on me at night. Just boom, woke up. And it hit me. I'm like, it's got to work. There's got to be some way for physics. And I was learning, at this point in time, high school physics.
This was your eureka moment?
Yes, it was my eureka moment with the one-length irons, absolutely. So I go build these clubs. It took us about 2 weeks over at Roger Dunn's. And, I mean, you would not believe the amount of sanding wheels we went through. Just grinding all the metal off of these irons on the wedges all the way up to 8-iron. And then we spent probably another $150 on lead tape putting weight
back
on the 4-iron, 5-iron, 6-iron, trying to get them all up to 7-iron head weight.
Yeah.
You know, the 7-iron is the middle of the set.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can kind of move back and forth. Plus, it was my favorite club. So we made it. They're all the one length, all the same weight. We double checked them, swing weights the same, shaft, stiffness, everything the same. So I said, all right, Mike, what do we do now? Nothing more you can do but test them. Went out to Riverbend, Dragonfly. First hole, drive down there about 160 out. So I hit an 8-iron. I just hit it as hard as I could, making sure it wasn't gonna go 170. Hit it as hard as I could. Landed right next to the pin, 160 yards out. I'm like, okay, there's something there. We go to the next hole. I got about 200 in. And I'm thinking to myself, standing over this club, this is a 7-iron length, 5-iron. There's no way this thing's going 200 yards, right? Maybe it'll go 185 or something like that, right? So I swing it as hard as I possibly can. Boom, hit it. And it just flies up, just like a 5-iron. Lands right next to the flag. I turned over to Mike. I said, this could change the game.
This is all starting to make sense to me. It's something that you should be very nervous about.
Yeah. That's not good.
Well, we've been picking at your brain about this scientific stuff, so I think it's time for a little quiz. All right, as the FU physics quiz. Action and reaction forces comprise the parts of A, a single interaction, or B, two interactions.
Two.
That is correct. A Mack truck and a Volkswagen traveling at the same speed collide head-on. The impact force is A, greater on the VW, B, greater
it's
on the Mack.
It's the same. The force is the same.
Let's see. Correct and right.
It's too easy.
Question three. Your weight is A, actually your mass, B, the gravitational attraction between you and Earth, or C, making Colin Montgomery very jealous at this moment?
B, but I have to go with C too.
B is correct. Yes. Which of the following correctly describes the motion of a real object in free fall? A, it will fall with increasing speed and increasing acceleration. B, it will fall with increasing speed and constant acceleration. Or C, it will fall like my playing career.
It's C and B.
You're correct.
Okay.
Yet again. The force of friction on a sliding object is 10 newtons.
Okay.
The applied force needed to maintain a constant velocity is A, less than 10 newtons, B, 10 newtons, or C, less than we applied in the Ryder Cup. Well, the answer is B. Okay, last question.
I can't take it seriously.
Last question. Excuse me, pay attention, please, pay attention. If two people pull with the force of 1,000 newtons each on opposite ends of a rope and neither person moves, what is the magnitude of tension in the rope? A, 2,000 newtons, B, 1,000 newtons, or
zero.
C, sorry?
Zero. The magnitude is zero.
Actually, the answer is C. The magnitude of tension in the rope is Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth's relationship.
Roasted.
Right, that's enough of that. You're a California kid. What drew you down to Dallas and the SMU?
Well, full ride helps.
Yeah, that'll help.
That always helps.
Yeah.
You know, I also had a coach that really believed in me. He looked at me and said, you have a unique ability to figure things out. And, you know, I like that. No matter what you bring to the table, I think that you're going to be a great fit. That's really what sold me, because there's a lot of coaches out there that didn't say that, didn't ever say that. And he was the first coach to say, I believe in you.
You were thrust onto the national stage pretty early in your amateur career. Was there a moment where you figured out that you were maybe a little bit better than the rest?
Oh, man. Well, I knew growing up I was pretty good at golf, but I'd never really beaten anyone big. And so I think the moment which I knew I had something kind of good was when I won the NCAAs.
Bryson DeChambeau has won his first individual championship for his school.
I knew I could do it coming into this week. I knew my game was good enough, and I did it.
When the USGA announced the rule change with regard to the pin,
yes,
that was your reaction, was it?
Yes, yeah, I loved it.
I used to make sure that the pin was loose.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you want that vibration. It'll absorb.
It'll dampen absorb. The speed.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes!
Yeah.
I got something that Bryson knew. Yeah. Well, the pin in or out isn't the only situation. You've gained some attention from the USGA. The side saddle experiment.
That was great.
Is that something that you would have kept doing, you think? Yeah?
Probably. I would have gone deeper with it. It just got to a point where they really just didn't want me to do it. Look, I love the USGA. I'm a part of their family and will be forever. And I would love to work with them to make the game a lot more enjoyable and easier for people to play. Mm. You know, we want to keep the integrity of the game 100%, but we want to be able to grow the game, and growing the game requires that you make the game a little easier to hold and grasp hold of.
Uh-huh.
And I think that from a side saddle perspective, if I would have worked on it a little bit more and I would have known what I know now about the body, I could have made it work really easily and known what I know about how to launch a ball on a green. Knowing all those factors, I could have done it, and it would have been very interesting.
Do you think you'd be a better putter today than you are if you had continued with
maybe, that? Maybe, because I still struggle with seeing lines from a horizontal position. But vertically, boom, I can roll it now right down my line.
All right, set the record straight. Is it a compass or a protractor? I mean, why don't you go the whole way and whip out your theodolite?
It's a mechanical compass.
What were the reactions you got when you were pulling it out in practice rounds? The compass, that is.
There was a lot of, like, what are you doing? Mind your own business. Just, it was something that allowed me to locate the pins way more efficiently, because you know, pin locations aren't accurate out on tour all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we wanted to make sure that it was exactly on the contour maps, you know, where we thought they were, so we could read putts better.
Which do you enjoy more, playing the game or figuring it
out?
Figuring it out. 100%. Figuring it out.
I will not go out and just play a normal round of golf by myself.
You don't, right? I mean, you spend your time in the bays here or on the range and just...
Yeah, all the guys out here will tell you, I never play.
Yeah?
I barely ever play out on the golf course because I love trying to figure out one little thing that's going to make me more repeatable.
I got to ask you, your caddy, Tim Tucker... Tim sometimes looks like a donkey staring at a new gate. Bless his heart. Or he needs more fiber in his diet or something. I mean,
well, the best part is, you know, he failed pre-algebra.
Oh, no.
Yes, he did.
So how does he cope with all of this?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. He loves figuring things out, too.
Yes.
So that's the reason why I have him on the bag, is no matter what, even if he struggles with certain numbers of things, I'll correct him. And sometimes I'm wrong and he'll correct me. But for the most part, he loves figuring out what's going to make not only him better, but me better as well. Because he knows in the end, that's a benefit to him. And I fired him once at Career Builders, by the way. I fired him because I wanted somebody that has been out here for a long time. I didn't have a veteran.
Right.
And it was the worst decision I could have ever made. Mm. It's actually the best decision I could have ever made.
Because it made you realize.
Because it made me realize exactly that he was worth it. Yeah. That's why it works well. And I found him on Craigslist.
I always wondered, you know, I mean, I'm not sure if I could carry that back. Now, look, I have a theory. I reckon Bryson's mom might have dropped the boy on his head. And he has what's known in brain science as acquired savantism, which is the ability to do such things as paint, play music, or do complex mathematical equations after a brain injury. It's a real thing. Or in other words, the boy's not right. However, he was right enough to prove the rest of us wrong in 2018. But in science, just like in life, sometimes it's trial and error. After 2 weeks of the playoffs, the FedEx Cup was pretty much yours to lose.
I lost it. I lost it.
You did. You managed it. You know, but a tournament scoring record of the Northern Trust, then you hold off a world number one the next week to win by 2 shots. What was your motivation going into Tour Championship? Was it making the Ryder Cup or winning the FedEx Cup, or both?
The Ryder Cup was always on my mind, but for the most part, I wanted to win. I knew if I finished top 10 to top 5, it was mine. There was really nothing anybody could do. And unfortunately, I actually hurt my shoulder Thursday. That morning, practice session, it actually just gave out. And so I was playing with my left arm the whole round. I got in like two or three over, something like that. It was tough. That's the other thing, too, is I don't have a very good memory with what I shoot or how I play.
See, that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, yeah.
All you need for a happy life is good health and a bad memory.
Exactly. You got it. That's very, very true.
Yeah.
So, you know, I play and awful. It was so bad. I actually had to fly my trainer in, but I was already behind the eight ball. It just felt like there were things that just went against me. The 71st and 72nd holes, if I would have birdied out, I would have still had a chance to win the FedEx Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And I three-putted on 17 from 15 feet straight down the hill. Just bad speed control. And that was it, unfortunately. It was a pretty disappointing way to finish off the year for such a great year. But at the same point in time, I knew that it was a season that I'll forever remember as a catapulting season to where I think I'll be for a long time. You know, in a playoff series, I personally think that if you win twice, two out of the four, you know, and some other person doesn't win the next two in a row, I mean, you got to think that that guy is got to be the winner of it all. But I know they're trying to create drama, and yeah. I appreciate that too. I think it's great for the tour. I think it's great for the entertainment aspect of the tour. But you know who didn't win.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is, though.
Immediately after the grind of the FedEx Cup playoffs, DeChambeau went to Paris for his rookie appearance at the Ryder Cup. His first pairing was with Ryder Cup stalwart Phil Mickelson. On Saturday, Bryson faced the unstoppable duo of Tommy Fleetwood and Francesco Molinari, but he was partnered with the indomitable force that is Tiger Woods.
You know, what advice did he give you?
Well, he said some things that opened my eyes a little bit, allowed me to understand that this is going to be a hostile environment, and people are going to root against you, and you just can't worry about it. You got to be in your own little bubble.
Yeah.
And that's what Tiger's great at doing, is being in his own bubble. And so I tried to do that the whole week, and it really helped. I mean, I played great golf. Don't get me wrong. Like, I hit a couple of bad shots here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the last day I shot 5-under, and Alex Noren shot 6 with a 60-foot on the last hole. It's not like I played bad. We just got beat. They played better.
Yeah.
You know, and so Tiger said that, look, it's going to happen. You know, when you're playing guys that may not be necessarily good as you, they're going to bring out their best because it's the Ryder Cup, and they're playing against a better player.
He didn't have his best that week. He was exhausted, I think.
Dead.
What were your impressions of his game, you know, after the sort of comeback year?
I think he's the most interesting man to ever play the game.
I don't know, you're getting there.
If you look at it, though, from that standpoint, that he's done things that nobody's ever had to even go through and come back and performed and played well, you know, and that's why I appreciate what he's done for the game. And every time I get the chance to be around him, I try and learn a little bit, because a little bit could mean a lot.
How much input did you have with who you were going to play with?
The veterans had more input, I would say. Personally, for me, I really didn't want to say, hey, I'm going to play this person, that person.
You just wanted to play?
I just wanted to play and get a great experience and win, obviously. But, you know, I was leaving the decisions up to the people that have been there before.
Would have been easier for you to play with Justin Thomas or Tony Finau?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. If being 100% completely real right now, yeah, absolutely. Would I have changed it for the world? Absolutely not.
We saw your reaction after winning Memorial, after winning the Shriners. It's pretty obvious that you wear your heart on your sleeve. That loss at the Ryder Cup, does it stick with you, or is it just something that's...
I played good.
Yeah?
That's the thing, win or lose. If I execute, that's all that matters to me, man.
Yeah.
That's what's so cool about what I... Like, it's great when I execute and win, and it's this double hit, you know, for me.
What do you think it'll take to tip the scales?
The first thing is not having it right after the Tour Championship.
Yes.
That's just such a disadvantage to us. Most of those guys on the team weren't even playing in the Tour Championship, and they're ready to go play.
Yeah,
where we come over there, we're dead. I just played 4 weeks pretty much in a row, 5 weeks pretty much in a row, practicing and working hard 5 weeks in a row, and go over there and we have a Ryder Cup to go play?
Mm.
You kidding me?
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor. I'm not getting any younger, as my training coach loves to remind me, but I am getting more experienced. Farmers Insurance is about experience too, which is one reason why they support this show. Well, that and my debonair charm, I assume. So thanks to Farmers, and let's get back to it.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Bryson, this is rapid fire. It's kind of self-explanatory. Somebody start the atomic clock. What is your ball marker of choice, a coin or a poker chip?
Oh, a coin.
Wine, red or white?
Red.
Hogan or Woods?
Both.
Good answer. The bear or the king, Jack or Arnie?
Both.
Mm-hmm. A big old Texas steak or a California burrito?
Oh, steak. Kidding me?
Benz or Bentley?
Come on, Bentley.
That's your brand, hey?
Yeah.
That's nice. Text before you call or a straight phone call?
Oh, text, for sure.
Dinner with one person, dead or alive? Dinner with a dead person would be really weird.
I mean, you're just talking to a coffin, right?
No, if you were going to have dinner with one person.
Yeah, no, I know. Einstein, for sure.
Ah, good one. Who's the funniest guy on tour?
Oh, Duffner, for sure.
Oh, yeah, the Duff. The guy on tour you'd pick to have your back in a fist fight?
Dustin, for sure.
Yep.
Dustin. Or AJ, his brother. He's pretty good, too.
Have you ever been punched in the face?
No, I punched someone in the face, though.
You have?
Yeah, back when I was in second grade.
Fill in the blank. I will consider my career on tour a success if...
I definitely want to get up there in the double digits with majors. I think I can.
Well, that is the end of Rapid Fire. As usual, nobody wins.
Yay!
Every great player I've ever met, they've had a high opinion of themselves. You have to have that to a certain extent. Have people ever called you cocky or arrogant?
Yeah, they have, especially when I'll hit a shot that's really good and I'm like, ah, that just wasn't right. I got lucky on that. And they're like, I'm not gonna say it, but they'll say that. And I'm like, sorry, it's just my neurological perception of what I did and me not executing it correctly and then winding up hitting it close. There's a couple things that canceled out for that to work. You know?
It's an interesting neurological perception. I'm not sure I've ever heard that in reference to a golf swing or game.
Yeah, it's there. I mean, we all have that. That's a feel, essentially.
Yes.
I felt like, and I'll tell you this, I felt like I had a good enough game to get me on tour. But once I got on tour, I realized I couldn't perform week in and week out with the golf swing and the game that I had at that point.
What clicked?
I got a better understanding of my neurological perception.
Is that what it was?
Seriously. Yeah. Literally figuring out how my body functions more consistently. Because I went and won the John Deere, then went and missed the cut at the British Open by a million.
Mm.
And that was not okay. I was like, I don't care what time zone I'm in. I want to be able to go to a tournament and be able to execute the same exact way as I did the last week, whether I'm tired, whether I'm fatigued, adrenaline's out. I need to figure out a way to do that.
Anyone with working eyeballs and ears has probably figured out by now that you're a little different, you know, from most people. How did that resonate with the veterans on tour when you first showed up?
There's some people that like me. They think I'm interesting. There's some people that are indifferent. And there's some people that think I'm fake. They think I'm just putting on a show. And that's not true. I'm very, very passionate about executing and performing shots that I have intended to hit. You know, and when they don't happen, frustration and disappointment is going to happen. And I'm going to respond sometimes in ways that some people may not like. At the same point in time, though, that passion is what has gotten me here. You know, my dad realized that, my coach realized that, and they didn't ever want that to go. You know, now being a professional, you have to be able to control that in certain situations, and I realized that. And I'm getting much better at that each and every day. But what I will say is that passion will always be there because I want to figure it out so badly. My dad always told me to make your signature legible. So whenever I'd sign my name, my dad would always say, make it legible.
But your name's not legible even when it is legible.
Some people can't read it. DeCambio.
Brandel DeChambly.
No, don't go there.
Take another couple of guys out there who do it differently. Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson. It's like they take the thinking out of the game. You know, whereas you're always thinking, is part of it, you occupy your mind with something constructive while you allow your body to do what you've taught it to do?
In every tough pressure situation, when I go back to the numbers, what I have to get done, the process that I go through, I don't get nervous because I'm so occupied with the process.
Right.
And that's been a huge benefit to me.
So you're paying attention to what is happening instead of thinking about what might happen?
Correct. Always thinking about what I need to do rather than what could happen.
Right. Does the thinking part ever hurt your game?
People always tell me, do you overthink? And I'm like, the times that you think you're overthinking, you're just thinking about the wrong things.
Right.
That's all it is. For me, I've always worked as hard as I possibly could to think about what will make me better. And if it's making me worse, that's obviously not the right thing to think about.
Yeah.
Some people will classify that as overthinking. It's not, it's just you're thinking about the wrong things.
There are some people out there that think this science thing is kind of, you know, it's sort of overdone, but maybe it's not really what you're thinking. What do you say to them?
Well, if you want to come spend a day in the life with Bryson, you'll quickly understand.
That's what I'm doing, and I am.
You'll quickly understand that that's not the case. It's not fake at all. It's literally me trying to be the best human I can possibly be. And the only thing that's consistent in life is, well, taxes and death, but I would say science.
Are you striving for perfection?
I always say, let today's garbage be better than yesterday's. So I will not say I'm striving for perfection. I'm striving for betterness.
I'm familiar with meltdowns. I've been having one for the last 30 or 40 years. But at the Porsche European Open, you had one of your own. Did that come out of nowhere, or was it kind of coming from somewhere?
Oh, it was coming from me not being comfortable on the golf course. And that's something that I practiced my whole life, and the reason why I'm out here all the time working on my game, so that never happens. And it did. And that's one of those moments that I have learned tremendously a lot of information from.
So tied for the lead going into the final round and playing alongside the man who won, you see the quick handshake and just walks off. You're in the heat of the moment, but not one of Bryson DeChambeau's finer moments. And he paid for it a little bit on social media. Eddie Pepperell tweeting this afterward. It has to be said, as far as classless handshakes go, this was a good one.
I've actually become a better person because of that situation. What doesn't kill you is going to make you stronger. Mm. As much as people think that it really wasn't the fact that I lost the tournament, it was because I didn't execute up to my potential. Yeah. And you know, as a professional, it doesn't look good. I will say that, you know, I'm definitely sorry for my actions. Didn't mean for anybody to be hurt by it or it to look bad on different things.
But you did apologize, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm never dishonest in that regard. I will always say when I'm wrong or when I'm at fault and apologize. That's never an issue for me. It's more of the fact that I didn't think it was that big of an issue that people blew it up a little bit more than was needed.
Well, maybe you just don't like Europe, but you had a bit of a hissy fit at the Open Championship at Carnoustie as well.
It all comes down to golf swing for me. If I don't have the proper neurological input to the golf swing and I'm not comfortable with it and I don't execute and I can't figure it out, it's mainly the I can't figure it out portion that gets me frustrated and disappointed and mad. I don't care if I shoot six over and I'm hitting it perfect, because that's something I can't control at the end of the day. You know, but if I can control me and I'm executing it perfectly, realistically, I'm not going to shoot six over. But at the end of the day, it's really about me and being able to execute it. If I don't, I get frustrated.
Ron and John are two names that are kind of significant in your family.
Yeah.
What does the name Ron Bankafir? What does that mean?
He gave my dad life. My dad has been struggling with diabetes since he was 35 or 36 or something like that. And he went on dialysis a couple years ago. It's every other day for 3 hours a day. It was like a part-time job of pumping all the blood out of his system and back into his system, cleaning it out.
That's kind of hard to watch.
It's brutal. And usually when you go on dialysis, you're on the back end of your life.
Yes.
You're going to go. My dad was struggling with this for about a year and a half, 2 years, trying to get a kidney. We do this outing at River Park Golf Center for the National Kidney Foundation. And his high school buddy, Ron Bankafir, comes out to show some support.
My name is Ron Bankafir, and I went to high school with John DeChambeau. We played a lot of golf together. We played basketball together.
I was doing the emceeing for the event, and once I got finished, I got a chance to go over and sit down next to Ron, and you know, he says, I didn't know you needed a kidney. So what's your blood type? And I said, O positive. He says, so am I.
I said, well, John, I said, I know why you don't have your kidney yet, because you need my kidney. Doctor comes and the first thing he says is, Ronnie, are you sure that you and John aren't related? He said, because we very seldom see a match this perfectly aligned.
And at that point, they both started bawling and crying, because it's just, there's no way that his high school buddy could be a perfect match. The odds of that are so
staggering.
Yeah. And so that's what they did.
How's your dad doing now?
He's doing good.
He was a pretty good player in his day,
wasn't he? Very good player. This is just thinking about all these different things. You know me, in my brain, I think about different things. And, and just thinking about how much he's given to me to be where I am today is pretty special.
Well, you've won an NCAA championship. You won a U.S. amateur. If you had to pick a major to win, which one would it be?
It'd have to be the Masters.
You seem to like consistency. And of course, the Masters go back to the same place every year.
I feel like at this point in time, I've gotten a good grasp of what that golf course entails and how to play better on it this coming year. You know, last year was the first year where I was able to shoot in the 60s in the tournament. So that was a big deal for me. And being able to shoot in the 60s was like, okay, I can do it. I know what to do now to play really good there.
Well, it's been great picking your brain. Feeling there's a lot more that we haven't covered, that's for sure. But thanks for having me here at the Dallas National, Bryson.
Appreciate it, Bernie.
Really interesting. Thanks.
Thank you.
Clearly, there is a lot going on in Bryson's head. He has so many thoughts and theories to pick apart in that massive brain. He'll ruminate until they turn into a reality, which is what sets him apart. What makes him great is they appear to be working.
Meanwhile, my ruminations always seem to leave me stranded on the side of the road, confused, and for some reason, with a sheep. I may be no Einstein, but this young man reminds me of an ancient German philosopher whose name I don't remember, who said, "Talent hits a target no one else can hit, but genius hits a target no one else can see." Thanks for joining me, Faherty fans. That's our show for tonight. You can catch me on Facebook, Instagram, and FaherTwit. You can also find more Faherty podcasts presented by Farmers Insurance on Faherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Faherty and subscribe. If you love the show, why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating.